The Monologue.
An absolute total disaster as it relates to the Washington Redistricting Commission. We've been talking about this for a while, that after the census, according to new legislation, it's not actually new legislation, newish generally speaking, but it came back in the early 90s, basically saying that we put together a commission and we use the new census data to redraw maps. Now, the way that it's put into place is that you've got four people and it effectively forces a compromise. You have two Democrats and two Republicans. Now, we've been talking about this a lot on the show because it's so important to make sure your voice is heard should it end up going to the Supreme Court. If the two groups can't agree to compromise on legislative maps, it ends up going to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will look at some of the feedback. And those of you who left feedback, kudos to you, because unfortunately it is now going to the state Supreme Court. It was a total nightmare and a disaster last night, a total cluster. They had until 11:59 p.m. to put together their vote and approve of a map. They failed to do so. There was some indication that they were able to pull it out with just a few minutes to spare, but apparently that wasn't the case. They were supposed to have a press conference today, but it ended up getting canceled. And so now, because they couldn't come to a consensus, even though apparently they were very, very, very close, unfortunately, now it goes to a very liberal Supreme Court. They could choose to do it the right way, which is go with whatever map they apparently were really, really close on. They could choose to listen to the voters who very clearly are saying the state is becoming too far to the left, but they can also just lean into it becoming even further to the left, making it almost impossible for a Republican to win their district. Because what the Democrats were trying to do this entire time was take away any shot that Republicans might have in not only keeping the red districts red, but actually expand. What you can see is a whole bunch of gerrymandering that makes it impossible for Republicans to get into statewide office or to get into their seat, current or future, in either the House or the Senate in Olympia. That's what they could do in a worst case scenario. And there's nothing to stop them from gerrymandering at this point except for the people. The people speaking up very clearly about what their expectations are. These are all positions, the Supreme Court justice positions. Every single one of them is elected. These are elected positions. And for some reason, a lot of people seem to forget that. And even more people don't care enough to pay attention. That they end up voting for someone because they recognize a name. Because they like this person's name. They don't do any of the research necessary. However, that could obviously change. All of you immediately could start to say, I'm going to do my research and I'm going to get more involved because you know what's on the line. That's why so many of you decided to vote in this last election and send message after message after message that the defund movement, that the folks who are all about racial identity politics and critical race theory, they are wrong. They're on the wrong side of history. You spoke up and we won a good chunk of these races locally. And so if more and more people start to speak up and say, hey, we want to make sure that we have more competitive districts, not less, well, the Supreme Court justices who are up for re-election might actually say to themselves, hey, people are now starting to pay attention. So we better get our act together and do something for the people for once. Now, I'm not going to hold my breath. I don't even think that that's likely. I'm hoping that's what happens, but I'm not going to pretend that this is a Supreme Court that makes sense, that actually listens to the people. And you know what? It's at some point you have to look at yourself and ask whether or not you're doing what you can to be a part of the process, to create some solutions to these problems. And let's be honest, a lot of you are not. Sometimes I'm not. But this is a perfect opportunity to get more involved because our future as a state, as a party, is on the line here if the Supreme Court makes the wrong move. And I have no reason to believe if you keep quiet and you don't send emails, you don't make a big stink about this, I have no reason to believe that they will surprise me this time. The Republicans on this committee, Mike Fain and Paul Graves, they try to make more districts competitive. Democrats didn't want to do that. So ultimately, that's what did this process in. And now it's going to the Democrat-run Supreme Court. You have more power than you want to admit. I tell you that all the time. Now is the time to use that power. Get involved and speak up.
The interview.
Well, we now have a selection of four for the next potential Tacoma police chief, but not everyone is happy. Some community groups, as we talked about in the first hour, are upset that they weren't included in the initial winnowing down of candidates. So how is the police union going with this process? Joining me on the line is Detective Henry Betts. He is the Local 6 union president for the Tacoma PD, and that's under that role is he speaking to me right now. Detective, welcome back to the show. We've got four candidates that have been selected. Are you pleased? Is the union pleased with the process so far?
No, I don't think I'd say we're pleased. I think it's unlikely a group here that are aligned with us feeling similar as a lot of the community groups where we didn't have much involvement in the process up to this point, really kind of kept in the dark or not even interacting back and forth with HR or other decision makers about it.
So on the one hand, I would say, while I understand why activist groups are upset, at some point, you can't have groups of people involved in winnowing down potentially hundreds of candidates, right? That doesn't really make sense. However, when it comes to police, since these are the folks who are going to be impacted from, you know, the new command staff level, it does make sense to include you, not necessarily in winnowing down the applicants. I don't necessarily think you have to look at every single applicant, but just to get a better sense of where things stand. So within the department, what are the issues that you're looking to have addressed by this new chief?
Well, there's a ton of issues out there as far as where we're going, and that could be its own show on its own.
Yeah.
But with this process, what we're really concerned about is whether or not we're setting up the next chief for success. And if you have all these community groups who are already kind of put off, and then your labor groups don't really feel like they've been involved, does the next chief have the opportunity to succeed? And it doesn't feel that way. It feels like we're kind of starting off on the wrong foot for them. And I don't know in depth on any of the finalists, so it's not a critique of them, but just giving them the opportunity to start off on the right foot. And then what effects does that have downstream, right? The real concern is that if the next chief isn't successful, what does that mean for the communities and the neighborhoods? How does that play out for them? And it's not good. That's the overall concern here. It's not really just about, you know, what does labor want or what does this community or that community group want. It's about the overall success of that organization.
Well, what does success look like? How would you define it?
Yeah, first of all, the challenges are huge, right? So we have a resource problem, we have support from leadership in the city problem, and you've got the laws and the legislation problem. None of those are being addressed, and the new chief has to balance simultaneously two huge things. That is turning around the tide of rise in violent crime and the nuts and bolts of just policing, the everyday operations of policing and addressing the crime spike. That issue is huge, and we need someone who can lead and make decisions and get an organization to attack that problem. But at the same time, there's a huge transformation process going on in which we're looking at systemic racism and transformation and being an anti-racist organization. That push from city leadership is really valid. They're working on that track as well. Evaluating somebody who can do both of those things. That is what the process should be focused on. If we fail to do either one of those, whoever that next chief is, if they cannot do both tracks, they will not succeed here. We will not do one and let the other one fail wholeheartedly. It's not going to work. We see right now new community groups, new grassroots community groups growing and coming out and being active in the community, worried about the safety, worried about houselessness and addiction and all the crime that comes with those large problems. There's a reason why those groups are forming and coming out of the woodwork now to try to meet those challenges. It's not just an anti-police thing. It's the crime we're seeing and trying to address that.
Well, it feels like there are two different kinds of groups out there. On the one hand, you've got the ones who are very sort of, with their rhetoric at least, anti-police. And on the other hand, you've got people who are saying, actually, we're super pro-police and we want to make sure that we have more police to go after some of the crime and some of the homeless issues that you just cited. So final question, we only about 30, 40 seconds left. Where do you think the city's going to go with those conflicts? They're not going to be able to make everybody happy.
Yeah, I don't see it as binary like that. I don't see it as two different groups. In a lot of the circles that we're seeing with community groups that what some would label as pro-police, they're actually asking for a lot of the same things that the other groups are. The problems are the problems. You have to address those problems. I don't think it's wholeheartedly two camps. And I think there's too many people in city leadership that look at it that way, that it's us versus them adversarial, mm-hmm. and it's absolutely not. And we're seeing that with city leadership. And I think this trying to appease different camps, it ends in failure. That's not what's going on. That's not really how it is. But they're running around trying to do that, and it results in failure.
There you go. We've been talking with Detective Henry Betts. He is the Local 6 Union President for the Tacoma PD. Thank you so much for giving us your perspective on this. Really appreciate it, as always.
Yep. Thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. Now this.
The Monologue.
Some terrifying news on the COVID front, this time out of Austria, where they decided that they were going to completely treat the unvaccinated or those unwilling to turn over their paperwork, treat them wholly unequal in what's believed to be the largest targeted lockdown against unvaccinated people. Austria is putting any adult or minor ages 12 and older, confining them to their homes. You can't leave unless you can prove that you are fully vaccinated or immune from a past infection, meaning you now have natural immunity because you've been diagnosed with COVID in the past. Now, if you're unwilling to do that, the only way you can get out of your home legally is if you're doing it for an essential reason, going to a doctor's appointment, going to get food from the grocery store. It's under this warning that it would increase police patrols in order to enforce this particular rule. And if you've found to be in violation, you've left your home because you wanted to get out of your house, understanding that especially when going outside, the chances of infection are almost zero, you would get hit with a fine up to about, our dollars worth, about $1,600. It's 1,450 euros, about $1,600 or so. That according to the AP. Now, it's, again, believed to be the first national lockdown like this, and it's initially expected to last 10 days. They're doing this because they want to cut down on the case rate, even though this won't actually cut down on the case rate because people who are vaccinated can still get and spread COVID. We know that as a matter of fact. In this country, you've got some people who love this idea. Arnie Duncan apparently is one of them. Arnie Duncan is the former Secretary of Education under the Obama administration. And he tweeted out a link to this New York Times piece on Austria saying, quote, "If you are a danger to yourself and others, you must remain at home. If you aren't, you are free to roam around the country. Austria is onto something." So, you know, it's funny because Arnie Duncan was a danger to others, particularly kids who went to school while he was Secretary of State, and yet we still allowed him to be Secretary of State. So maybe he should sit this one out or perhaps go to a more authoritarian country. But the truth of the matter is the Democratic Party right now has been leaning into authoritarian policies, and they've been doing so gleefully. We played the audio from The View and Sonny Hostin. Why would anyone give up personal freedoms if it means they could help other people? Except you're not helping other people. It's a fundamental misunderstanding of COVID. And it's at this point, it has to be a willful misunderstanding of COVID. Going outside is not a threat to anyone. Unvaccinated, vaccinated, doesn't matter. It is clearly not a threat, but they're doing it anyway. They're pretending otherwise. And you know that there's going to be some kind of push. You know that there's going to be some kind of push in this country for similar issues. You're already hearing it come from some people, not necessarily politicians. I don't know if this is something that could legitimately happen in this country. But you do hear folks on Twitter, who the kinds of people who put hashtag vaccinated in their profiles, indicating that they think they're some kind of hero for getting vaccinated. They're not. They made the right decision for themselves. If they view that as the right decision, presumably they do. But these are the kinds of people who seem to get vaccinated all so that they can shame others who are not. Not because they think it actually helps them, not because they want that protection, but because they believe it makes them better than others. And so they have to rub it in people's faces as if it's something to brag about, which is so weird that you're bragging about it. It's like bragging, "I took Tylenol because I have a headache. All you other idiots who are choosing not to take Tylenol when you have a headache, I hope your head explodes." Like, these are people who are just bizarre in their cult-like fascination with the vaccine and really with themselves. This is driven by narcissism, which is not something we should be celebrating. It's super weird, but you know that this is going to be a larger push in this country, you're going to start hearing more and more and more about it. It's something that obviously we have to be pushing back against. That would be absurd. That would be an abuse. But at the end of the day, as I wrote in my piece that's up right now at KTTH.com, there's a better chance of you getting COVID and surviving than not. And yet we treat it like the opposite is true. We treat it as if the 1% chance of death, and that's already higher than the actual number probably is, but let's just go with it. They act as if you have a 1% chance of survival if you get COVID, and the only way around it is to get vaccinated. But when you come up with these positions that's based in just nonsense, absolute nonsense, what ends up happening is you get a policy like what's going on in Austria, and we are not going to be immune to that here in the United States. I hope we are. I hope we end up becoming immune to it. But the same people who told us how Trump was an authoritarian, all of a sudden they're okay with the government basically leaning into authoritarianism.
The interview.
Well, unfortunately, as Democrat legislators decided that they were going to ban guns on the campus at the Capitol in Olympia, they ended up having an unintended consequence, or what I assume is an unintended consequence, of banning a 21-gun salute. It was a rather embarrassing moment for the state after a veterans anniversary event. One lawmaker, a Republican from Washington's 25th Legislative District, is trying to change this. Joining me on the line is State Senator Chris Gildon. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me on again.
Take me through this embarrassing moment just a few months ago.
So I got invited to attend the 71st anniversary of the Korean War, and the organizers were setting up the event on the Capitol campus. And during the course of all of the planning, they got a hold of me and they said, Chris, we're not allowed to do a 21-gun salute because of that bill that passed last year. And they're referring to Senate Bill 5038, which you just mentioned. And you know, bottom line is there was an exception in the bill for law enforcement, but there is no exception in the bill for a military rifle honor ceremony. And so they weren't allowed to do it. They were deeply disheartened because, you know, these Korean War veterans, they are they're getting older, and we're not going to have too many more years to be able to honor them properly. And so they were just very saddened, Jason.
Which makes total sense. I would be sad, and I'd probably choose different language to express myself in that case, probably be pissed off. What are you trying to do to change this, and what do you think is the likelihood of it changing?
Well, it's a very simple fix that just gives an exemption to these types of honor guard for the gun salutes, military rifle honors. And so the bill itself is very simple. I think that the bill would have, you know, widespread support. I think that this was really just an unintended consequence of, you know, the nature of the session last year. You know, we were in a virtual session where the public had very little access to their legislators and very little input. And I think this was just one of the unintended consequences that possibly could have been avoided had we had allowed public access in a more widespread manner to their elected representatives. And that's why, moving forward, I think that's something that we absolutely have got to avoid, Jason, is we've got to allow those face-to-face meetings of citizens with their elected representatives. You know, we have a citizen legislature, and citizen input is just absolutely vital to the whole process.
You make a point of this being an unintended consequence, and I'll go with you with that. I don't think anyone was thinking at all about 21-gun salutes, but I do wonder if the reason why they didn't think about that was because they're just anti-gun. I think you obviously have, I know you obviously have colleagues on the Democrat side who are just virulently anti-gun. And, you know, the whole idea of anyone carrying a gun, including law enforcement, is somehow triggering to them.
Yeah, and I think a little bit of this was knee-jerk reactions to all of the protests that were going on during the summer of 2020. But, you know, it was not just that bill. We had so many other bills that just were not thought through completely. The police reform bills that changed the standard of proof, the ones that prohibited police from pursuing suspected criminals. I mean, all of these different bills, they just did not think them through. And I am very hopeful that we'll come back this next legislative session and we will make some changes to some of those bills that passed without full consideration last year.
Just very quickly, I obviously hope that happens. you say you're confident. Why are you so confident that they will correct some of these so-called errors, even though, again, especially on the policing side, I question whether or not they're errors?
I think that they've taken so much backlash and heat, and now that the proof is in the pudding, because you see it every day in the news, I think that they're going to be forced to, and quite honestly, they're going to probably do it quietly. Mm-hmm. They're going to say these are minor tweaks to big bills, and regardless of how they want to frame it, I just want to make the laws right so that we have increased public safety in our state.
Well, there you go. We've been talking with State Senator Chris Gildon, Republican from Puyallup. As always, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Now this.
The Jason Rance Show.
Always glad to see Seattle radio host Jason Rance.
It's always a pleasure to watch you and a pleasure now to host you.
Jason, I just love your coverage of what's been going on in Seattle.
Jason, this is as bad as it gets in America.
Jason Rance, great to see you. Thank you.
Long Form, presented by Northgate Rare Coins and Precious Metals.
Fresh off his reelection to the King County Council, Councilmember Reagan Dunn is calling for the refunding of police. This, as King County Executive, also reelected, is set to begin his search, nationwide search, for a new King County Sheriff. Joining me on the line is Reagan Dunn. Councilmember, welcome back to the show.
Jason, thanks for having me.
What does your budget package include? What does it mean to refund police?
Well, this Refund the Police initiative that I'm launching is going to put about $15 million much-needed investment, about 33 FTEs, employees in the sheriff's office. It'll reestablish the gang unit. It's going to put money into recruiting and retaining deputies, including some bonuses when they come on board. Going to put a hate and bias crime unit together, as well as the gang unit, and a lot of other things that will help keep our community safe, things that have been stripped out or haven't been funded and have been neglected for a long time.
Isn't there reason to believe that there's even less of a charge here to make these kinds of changes, given that it's the current makeup of the council that said no to these policing tools in the past? And, you know, short of you getting this vote done before Kathy Lambert leaves, you now have an even further to the left council.
Well, I think that the Democrats on the King County Council learned a pretty important lesson here. 2 weeks ago at the election, when a Republican, tough-on-crime person got elected Seattle City Attorney, when people like me running in a swing district against another elected official won by 25%, they know that they have to be up. The four seats that are up coming up here in just under 2 years, all are going to have to deal with moderates. And I think they're much more likely to provide these kinds of funding solutions than they were even 2 weeks ago.
I certainly hope you're right. It's, you know, on your point of the voters electing Ann Davison to Seattle City Attorney, obviously they also rejected the police abolitionist who was running for the Seattle City Council. And then Bruce Harrell ends up winning for mayor over Lorena Gonzalez, who was one of the chief police defunders. This council still decided to put together a budget to cut nearly $11 million from the SPD. So why is it that you think in this case that the King County Council will pay attention to the voters? Why wouldn't they just do what the City Council is doing here in Seattle?
Well, the Seattle City Council obviously didn't get it. They didn't look at what happened in those City Council elections. I mean, they're all going to be in deep trouble there, but certainly the King County Council. Those districts are much more suburban than the downtown Seattle City Council crowd, the tear it all down sort of mm-hmm. defund the police crowd. And it's much more likely to carry the day. And if they're smart, they're going to start to see that we better start to hedge back up. Because those crime numbers, those record murder rates in King County, the record shootings in King County are going to be wrapped around their shoulders in the next election. Mm-hmm. And they are smart enough to realize that the woke left, the defund the police crowd, is losing elections for them, and they better come back to the center. And I'm actually forcing the issue by putting this before them.
Yeah, and I think forcing the issue is smart. Let's get these folks to actually be on the record, explain where it is they stand right now. I fear a little bit, and I think the media will play along with this, but I fear that a little bit of a way around this, you'll have council members who will say, well, why don't we wait until we get the new sheriff appointed? Dow Constantine is getting his search underway. It's now an appointed position. Let's not decide that we're going to sort of handcuff, for lack of a better term, this next sheriff with a budget. You know, maybe they want more. So let's wait until that happens. How much do you think that will actually occur?
That's an important point. And I think there's certainly going to be some of that. But we now have policy direction over the sheriff's office as well as power of the purse. So at the end of the day, that decision still comes back to us. And I can tell you right now, any single sheriff that comes in, if he's a sworn law enforcement officer, which we fought to make sure that was going to be the case, is going to want more people. So what we need to do is prime the office for his or her arrival, and that's what this seeks to do. And you're going to see more and more of me forcing Democrats to take votes they don't want to take. Like, for example, the 30-day notice before they buy a homeless hotel in the middle of the suburbs in King County. They don't like those votes. They don't like that stuff. And sometimes you got to force them to think through their policies before they vote no.
I'm sure that makes you very popular amongst your colleagues. We've been talking with King County Councilmember Reagan Dunn. What level of concern do you have on this new selection process by King County Executive Dow Constantine on the next sheriff? Because obviously you were not a fan of this move. You would have preferred voters actually get to say.
Yeah, well, sure. And I continue. Someday I'm going to run a charter amendment to change it back when they realize what a terrible idea this is going to be. The good news is we've already fought to get this person to be a sworn law enforcement officer. So that's good. But I am very worried that they're going to put, somebody in there who's going to be completely unwilling to disagree with the executive and the majority of the King County Council. They're just going to be a sheep. And what we need is an independent, effective advocate for public safety in our community and for the men and women who wear the uniform in the sheriff's office. And boy, I'm going to fight for that.
How could they truly be independent under this new way? I mean, they know that they have to keep the executive happy.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at Carmen Best. There's a good example of what happens, if you try and be just a little bit independent, right? She
exactly.
Just finally said enough, I'm out of there. So yeah, the challenges are inherently bad. That's why you want, it's why more than any other position in the world, you want the sheriff to be elected. But what happened is the suburbs got overrun by the downtown Seattle population in this vote. At a time when the issue of sort of police oversight was maybe front and center, and it's clearly a lot of that has backfired since that time because we're seeing murders and shootings go way, way up. So there's a lot of quarters of football left in this one. We're gonna continue to fight for it.
So last question for you. Obviously, things did not go so well for King County Councilmember Kathy Lambert. She is going to be missed. On this council, she was one of the few Republican voices. You're obviously left now with one, moderate Republican colleague on issues of policing. Every once in a while, you'll get a council member, Claudia Balducci, on your side, but you're still going to be outnumbered. In fact, you're going to be more outnumbered now with leftists on the council than before. So what impact did that or will you think this change have on the council and your ability to get some of these bills passed?
Well, I'm so sorry to see Kathy. She's got a great heart, and she's worked very hard for her constituents, and she will be missed. It just means, Jason, that I have to practice my craft even better than I do right now. You have to use guerrilla tactics to get various things accomplished when you're in a minority. And I know how to do that. I can be articulate on the issues. I can build coalitions. But I'm going to do more of a different form of legislating. Jason, I will be running charter initiatives and petitions in King County to do things like, for example, provide adequate levels of funding for the sheriff's office tied to the national average for number of officers per 1,000. So you're going to see a lot of interesting guerrilla tactics, and we'll keep up the fight. I'm just going to need a lot of support, and we'll do what we can.
Well, you've definitely got the support of this show and its audience, so we really wish you the best of luck as you, in the short term, effort a position to get more funding to the, frankly, it's criminally underfunded King County Sheriff's Department. Reagan Dunn, council member from King County, thank you so much for stopping by as always. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Now this.
The Jason Rantz Show.
Jason Rantz, Seattle radio host, joins us now.
Jason, you're the perfect guest on this.
Jason Rantz, welcome back, Jason.
I see you often on other programs here.
Jason, what's going on?
Jason, thanks for coming on.
The Quick Hit.
So earlier in the show, we talked a little bit about the hearing today in front of a Senate committee between the senators and Secretary Mayorkas. And it was pretty remarkable what was said, and really in a lot of cases what wasn't said. You would think that a secretary talking about the concerns at the border might come prepared, but it's more likely that in order to get out of telling a lie, they just kept him completely in the dark as it relates to some of the issues that they knew would come up. We understand that when you make it easier to get into this country illegally, you are basically incentivizing people to take that trip. Now, up until you get to the United States, it's really dangerous. Once you get here, once you get across the border, it's much easier. You are welcomed with open arms, and you're essentially invited to stay. Those who actually get caught crossing. We have lots of folks known as gotaways. Those are the ones who got away. We have a number that we know got away, meaning we saw them in some sort of video surveillance, drone footage, whatever it happens to be. And then, of course, there are the unknown gotaways. So we don't know how many people got into this country through our porous borders, but didn't have any sort of contact with them visually. We don't know what that number is. Obviously, that number exists. Obviously, people are coming into this country illegally, and it makes sense that there's going to be some that we don't have any contact with whatsoever. Unfortunately, we don't have the manpower, again, purposefully, at the southern border. Now, we could be closing these holes within our border. We could be doing that work, but we're choosing not to, because apparently it is inhumane to have a closed border. Somehow, we're the only country that has to deal with the fact that borders are somehow racist, because this is stolen land or some nonsense. And so we got a better look at what it is, what actually the impact of this is at the border. We've heard lots of commentators on the right pointing out that this is part of a purposeful shift in demographics, that you bring in people into this country who are going to support the party, essentially, that allowed them to come into this country illegally. And so this has a demographic advantage to the Democrats, and that's why they're doing it. And we're getting a better sense of exactly how many people who crossed into this country illegally and are still here.
Approximately 965,000 were expelled.
Okay.
Approximately 40,000 have been removed. Approximately 125,000 unaccompanied children have been transferred to the custody and the shelter of Health and Human Services. The balance are, to the best of my knowledge, in immigration enforcement proceedings.
Mm-hmm. Where, so what does that leave us? How many people are still here? Of the 1.7 million, how many people are still here?
I would estimate approximately 375,000 are
still here.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So 375,000, which is obviously lower because that's of the 1.7 million who we know crossed the border illegally. 375,000 are still here. And where are they going? What are they doing? How are they working? How are we serving them with tax dollars, even though they didn't choose to go into the come into this country the legal way, the right way? How many of them have questionable legal criminal backgrounds? How many of them have questionable criminal backgrounds? We have no idea. We usually find that out after they've committed a crime on U.S. soil, only then to be protected by Democrats from getting deported despite violating the law. Now, do I think that a considerable portion of the 375,000 are individuals with criminal histories? No. How many? I have no idea, but let's just say it's a percentage point. Let's say 1%, 2%. That's 1% or 2% in this country who will commit a crime against an American citizen. Obviously, we can say that that is wrong. Obviously, we have vetting procedures in place for a reason. And yet in this country right now, we have a Democrat president and Democrats in power who don't seem to care because they believe that they will benefit from this politically down the line. They know that when you vote on actual issues and you get in front of American citizens, you're going to lose, regardless of the political positions of these voters, because most people aren't just a Democrat and just straight ticket voting Dems. That's not how it works. Same thing on the right. There are conservatives who obviously don't just vote for conservatives, or Republicans who don't just vote for Republicans. Most people lean in one direction, and they might identify as one particular party, but they don't just vote in a monolith. That's not how the average American voter looks at races. But it was a moment with Senator Ted Cruz that Mayorkas really showed us how dishonest this administration is.
Have been sexually assaulted being trafficked into this country in 2021.
Senator, I have no ability to determine how many.
Okay, you don't know, so you didn't try to find out?
Have been sexually assaulted in Mexico along the migratory.
All right, how about this? How many children have been sexually assaulted by traffickers or other people when they were coming in illegally?
I do not have that data.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you don't know that either. Let me ask you this. How many illegal immigrants have you released into the United States who were COVID positive?
Senator, it is our policy to test individuals.
I didn't ask your policy. How many illegal aliens have you released who are COVID positive?
Well, let me just say, when they are released, they are placed in immigration.
How many have you released that were COVID positive?
I will have to get that number.
Okay, you don't have that answer either.
Right,
let's try
answer.
This. How many illegal aliens have you released who had criminal convictions?
Who have criminal convictions in Mexico? In the
criminal convictions in whatever jurisdiction?
Those individuals, if they pose a public safety threat.
How many individuals with criminal convictions have you released?
Senator, I do not have that.
Okay,
number.
Let's specify.
He doesn't have that number. But he does have that number. They don't vet him? Oh, maybe that's why he doesn't have that. Do they not vet? Oh, they don't have that. Okay, got it.
And more narrowly, how many murderers have you released?
I'm not aware of any murderers whom.
How many?
Whoa, hold on. How is he not aware of any murderers? He said he doesn't even know how many people have been released with criminal backgrounds.
Rapists have you released?
I'm not aware of any rapists.
I'm not aware.
How many child molesters have you released?
I am not aware of any child molesters whom we have released into the United States.
He's not aware of it, he says. But he doesn't know the number of folks who have criminal histories that we've allowed, that they've allowed into this country. Oh, I got it. Huh. Interesting. I mean, it's kind of transparent what's happening. I think you guys realize, obviously, what's happening. This is one of those issues that really didn't get that much coverage today, which is why we talked about it so much on the show today. People are paying attention to the Rittenhouse trial. Important. I understand why they would. People are paying attention to the stories on inflation. Again, I understand why that happens. But this is one of those stories that's incredibly important that's not getting a whole lot of attention. And I can understand from the Biden administration's perspective why they don't want any ears on this.
The Last Rants.
And with that, I give you a gentle reminder to make sure that you diversify what kind of news you check out. In a lot of ways, it's really easy to stick with just one source. But if that one source isn't delivering to you a whole bunch of different kinds of news stories, then you are not serving yourself well as both a consumer of news, but more importantly, as an American citizen who cares deeply about this country, deeply about your community, and you should be aware of all these stories. You think CNN and MSNBC covered this in depth? They did not. They chose not to. They have a race war to try to get going with the Rittenhouse trial, even though it has nothing to do with race. That's what they're focused on. And so you've got important stories like this that are getting very little coverage, which means you're not getting as much as you could. So I recommend people all the time, don't just lean on, even on Fox News. They can't cover everything in depth the way that it's necessary. I can't on this show. We do what we can by covering some of the best of moments, but I do think people would be benefited to step up and spend a little bit more time on some of these news stories. And so that should be a little bit of a homework assignment for you. Figure out the best ways that you can make this work. Get more information on some of these important issues. And by the way, as you're doing the research, you might find that a bunch of stuff happened that you didn't even know about. And then you end up doing a little bit deeper dive into that. And that's Last Rants.